Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You are listening to the Grief Gang podcast, hosted by Amber Jeffrey. The podcast dedicated to having difficult and layered conversations on grief and loss. Through my own personal reflections on grief, inspirational guest appearances, and contributions from the incredible community, you will find an array of real, authentic, moving, and at most times humorous accounts of what it's really like to live with grief. It's not always doom and gloom, I promise you that. We know how to have fun whilst talking about the heavy stuff around here. So, welcome to the gang. The one you never asked to be a part of. Dan, hello and welcome back to the Grief Gang podcast. Second time is a charm. We got there in the end, but it is such a delight to finally be having this conversation with you. How are you today?
Well, honored to be back again. And fingers crossed, yeah, that it'll work this time. We get it out there.
Absolutely. By hook or by crook, I was like, I'm having this conversation with Dan Fisher. The world cannot stop me with that. No way, Jose. And I'm pleased.
I waited till the last second to make sure there wasn't another email coming in just in case. That's just how it's been with us back and forth. So happy that it's going to finally happen this time.
Me too. And I'm just so excited to share with the Grief Gang audience about your incredible work with One Last Wave Project. But I'm not going to tell it because I won't do it justice at all. So Dan, there is obviously a reason why you are here on the Grief Gang podcast, and you have both, you know, a beautiful and such inspiring story. So I'd love for you, Dan, to share with the listener what connects you to the Grief Gang and what is One Last Wave Project.
Thank you for having me on again and the opportunity to share the story and the project with all your viewers and whatnot. So I lost my dad in 2019, and he battled pancreatic cancer for 8 years, and that was the sort of the final go in March of 2019. And then about 8 months later, I lost my bestest friend, Rudy, my Malamute puppy, after 15 years together and countless adventures. So those are two huge losses that year. And then I lost two aunts and a grandmother. And I was in a place where I was really experiencing grief and that depth of it at that time, and didn't really know where to go. I wasn't equipped with the tools to cope with it. And so I struggled for quite a long time trying to find and navigate my way through it. And then eventually I began surfing as a way to sort of cope with it and just have some solitude and deal with the emotions and sort of keep a faith in some ways, where I decided to take my dad out. We had this incredible bond of adventure throughout the years, ever since I was a little kid. And I decided I wanted to connect with him that way and take him out on another adventure. And so I wrote his name down on one of my surfboards, and we paddled out into the ocean, and it was a beautiful day and caught some waves. And for that first time since I had begun to struggle with navigating the grief, I felt I was finding a way back to him. And it was in that moment that, you know, it was sort of peak COVID as well, and everybody was isolated, and I thought there was other people out in the world who may benefit as well from finding a unique way to connect. And often when we're struggling with grief, we don't know how to ask for help. And, you know, people say, you know, if I can do anything for you, I'm here. And we're not really in the space to be able to give those directions. And this was more of a call out and said, this is what worked for me. And if this could work for you, please do. So I recorded a TikTok video, put it out there. The next morning I woke up, and there was, you know, hundreds of names in the comment section of people who wanted to honor their loved ones in the same way. And out of nowhere, this just became something. So it became the One Last Way Project. And what that simply is finding a way to help families who are coping with the loss of a loved one by writing lost loved ones' names onto surfboards and then paddling them out into the ocean to catch that symbolic last wave. And it's just a way to celebrate their lives. And also, it's in a place that was really meaningful to not only the lost loved one, but to their families as well. In the ocean, some place that we often turn to. And so it's a way to celebrate someone's life and also help the families heal and connect them to those we have lost, as well as the bigger community, because the ocean connects us all. It's something that we turn to. So there's an element of honoring and celebration and also connecting as a way to help heal through community. And that's sort of how it came about.
Oh, you tell the story so beautifully, and it's making me think about those very early days when I first found One Last Wave, and just this overcome of, like, I love when I find or stumble across a project or an individual where I think it takes my breath away. Like, it quite literally did take my breath away when I first discovered you and One Last Wave. And I literally became besotted. I was like, oh my God, the next board is going up, the next this. And I was just like, yeah. And I would tell people, like, have you seen this? And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, you need to. And so it is just, you know, Dan, for that to have come out of, I think for so many of us who start this work, it is born out of something that we maybe have found an expression, whatever it may be. And we go, wow, that's really worked for me. I kind of want to share this. I want to share this, you know, in a way, a gift. And it's not like we're kind of, you know, forcing on everyone. We're just saying this works and it's something different. And if you want to be involved, be involved. And that's what it is. But before we go, I really want to kind of know and talk more about that wave, like that first the One Last Wave you took out with for your dad when the initial idea came to fruition. But I'd love to go back in a bit, and I'd actually love to know about your dad. I feel like I'd really love to know about your dad. You say about, you know, the adventures that you had. I'd love to know about your dad. What was his name? What is his name? And kind of that instilling that sense of an adventure in you. What was it like growing up with your dad?
Well, his name was Carl Fisher. Yeah, he was born in Hungary and immigrated to Canada. So I grew up in Montreal, and, you know, coming across as an immigrant, he was, you know, his whole family was that way. My grandmother and his mother were just such extremely hard workers. And so we sort of grew up in that way where it was hard work and determination. And, you know, part of it was he had a very playful side to him. You know, he wasn't a man of very many words. I always say that when people ask, you know, what would your father think of all this sort of stuff? And I always say, honestly, I don't think he'd say anything at all.
Not a lot.
Like I would know that there is some pride there, but I wouldn't hear it. You know, he was a very, very humble man. Mm. He didn't like to, you know, brag about his accolades. He was a very accomplished architect and built, you know, these beautiful buildings all over the world. But he was so incredibly humble and just, you know, I think that's part of why I have that deep connection to nature and the ocean, is that's where he sort of found his peace. Mm. You know, he didn't like to talk to other people in that way about what he was doing. He just liked to go into the woods and explore and do things. And part of it as a little kid is just the freedom to be able to do that, to have both my parents were like that, to give us the confidence that we could do anything in the world. And he instilled that in me, because that's very much, he came from nothing and he built himself up into something. But again, never once bragged about it or talked about it at all. He just wanted to be off. And that was, getting a little sidetracked here, that was part of why he was in the palliative care ward in Montreal, and he didn't want to die there. Nobody was being released from there, but he was somebody who wanted to pass away looking out the window at his cows in Vermont. And so he got up every night. I was there with him for the last month and a half of his life in the hospital. And we got up every night at, you know, 1:30, 2:30 in the morning, and like walked up and down the hallways. And that was just him. He was always so incredibly determined. Like as a kid, just all these memories flood again. But as a kid, he would never allow me to win anything. It was, part stubbornness, but also just, he was so, so driven to do everything and win at everything, not to talk about it, but for himself, he needed that. And so I think I was probably 15, 16 before I ever beat him in a foot race. And it was probably very, very close at the time, but there wasn't that, oh, you know, you're a 6-year-old kid, like daddy lets you win the race. No, he whipped my butt. there was nothing at all to it. So that was a lot of our competitive nature back and forth, but also knowing that it gave us that confidence to go out into the world and do anything. So the exploration part of it was just, you know, that add-on that we continued to do right up until he died. I mean, the last 6 months before he died, I'd always had a dream of going to France. We had been in France many times to follow the Tour de France, and I'd had this dream of cycling up Alpe d'Huez, which is a very famous climb, and it is excruciating for anybody who is extremely fit. You would know because you just run marathons when out of nowhere. But
I mean, crawled myself for a marathon, but I'll take the compliment.
There's something in that we bonded over as well. And so 6 months before he died, we took a plane over and drove down to Alpe d'Huez and ended up cycling up Alpe d'Huez together. And this man was, you know, half of his weight from where he was before. He was in no shape to be leaving the house, let alone flying across the country, let alone cycling up. And I remember as we were biking over, it was only about a mile or so, not a very long distance to bike to the base of the mountain. He fell off his bike like 3 times, cut up his knees. And I said, Dad, clearly this is not the day for it or the time for it. But he did it. There was no stopping him. And it was a gift that he gave to me, another adventure for us. And so this was, you know, when I look back at it and why I wanted to honor him in this way and do that and continue to do that, it was just something that brought us both such happiness, connected us together, connected us to who we are and the stuff that he passed down to me. Just a wonderful, wonderful human being. And I really miss that softness and humble side to him. He was someone who, you know, you could tell anything to. He never judged anybody, just listened, you know, offered advice when he wanted to, but it was never in a way that was, you know, you should do this or that. He was just a wonderful human being, and I miss him dearly every single day. And I know deep down he's proud, but again, wouldn't have heard it.
I love that you brought that up, Dan, and thank you for sharing your dad Carl with me. It's just, I think it's so nice to reflect on them and to remember them and to talk about them. But yeah, that really made me giggle of people ask me that all the time, what do you think your mum would say? Or when people say, yeah, your mum would be so proud of you, and I think it's maybe, like you said, I don't know if I would hear it all the time. Right. There would definitely be a lot of questions. I feel like perhaps both our parents would be quite inquisitive of why, what does this mean? Yeah. What's the purpose? Does it have an end? Does it this? I think there'd be lots of questions around it. But, you know, so beautifully of what you said, Dan, I think, you know, when we have these people in our lives, such as us, our parents, and they leave such, obviously, a lasting imprint on us, it is logical that kind of we find our ways or find ourselves maybe falling into these projects like we have that honour them, because everything you've just said there, I think, why would you not want to talk about him? Why would you not want to honour him? Why would you not want to keep saying his name and carving it into the board? Like, it's, you know, these projects we do, of course, it is to help people grieving. But at the core of it, like specifically for me, I'm like, I get to talk about my mum and I get to talk about the person that she was and still is in some degrees to me. And that is something people say, oh, is it hard work? Is it this? You know, there's busy days, there's everything and it's taxing. But it's at the core of it, you know, it's, well, I get to talk about my person and world where, you know, sometimes, you know, we know of plenty of people that we've probably spoken to in our communities where, you know, the phone dries up and the messages stop and people don't ask about them. So when we can channel that energy into something that then also helps other people, it is kind of like, wow.
It's very emotional work. Yeah, I every day with hundreds of emails coming in from families and hearing their stories, it is. It's extremely emotional to connect with them and to hear about their loss and their grief and the struggles. At the same time, you know that simple acts that you can do are helping them heal and to receive the messages afterwards about how helpful that's been when they've been struggling for so long. It all is worthwhile. But part of it is, for me as well as you, is the opportunity to speak again about those that I've lost and speak about loss in general and grief and to hear from other people and how they're coping, because just like love, I mean, every person that you love, everything that you love differently and you cope with that loss differently. And when you lose someone or lose a pet or whatever it may be, everyone is going to grieve in a different way. And I think it's important to hear people's different sides and how they're going about that, because we just aren't, I know for myself, like I wasn't equipped. I wasn't able to talk about my dad. Nobody showed me how to do that or what to do or how to honor him or how to connect or everything. So I was struggling in silence, which is I find a lot of people do. And that's when I get messages of, you know, I haven't been able to talk about, you know, my son or my daughter, or my mother, whoever may have lost. I haven't been able to talk about them for 20 years. And all of a sudden, just seeing their name on a surfboard allows me to start thinking about it more. Or when I walk by the ocean, I think that they're out there now. And it just, I think we tend to shy away from, not purposely, but we tend to shy away from having those conversations or visiting that pain that's inside. You know, we tend to hide from it, which is a natural human experience to have. You know, our reaction to it is to protect ourselves. We don't want to be dealing with the pain the whole time. But what I've found is the more I'm able to talk about it, the more I start to uncover, you know, it's kind of like when you go through heartache, you know, initially when you go through heartache and, you know, someone breaks your heart and all you think is, oh, I'm never going to, you know, love again. And there's pain, pain. And you look back years later and at least for me in many relationships, you know, it's, you think, oh, that was a wonderful relationship. That was a wonderful person. We had good times. And those are the things that you focus on. The same thing with grief is initially there's so much pain that connects you to that loss.
Yeah.
But then when you start to talk and share, and I never probably would have done that if it wasn't for one last way of coming about and having to have those conversations like this and continuing to have them, it taps into that, those beautiful memories and sharing those stories and being able to laugh about things like my dad or your mom or whoever it may be that we had lost, because we wouldn't normally do that on our own. And so I think that's a community is such a huge part of the healing process and why having these conversations and giving these examples to people who are struggling now, I think is extremely important.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Going back to what you kind of said about, well, for one, it's like a muscle, isn't it, with grief? I think it's like if we choose to, you know, when we're in the acute stages of our grief, there is no capacity for us to think, you know, it's kind of, the only thoughts that are going through our head are those really tough, difficult ones. There's no room to allow for, how do I want to honour them? Because you just think, well, you know, everything in your brain is stuffed, full of all this horrible pain. And it is only when I talk with people about this, I'm like, it's never like, time is a healer, as that cliche goes. But as time moves forward, I feel like the capacity in our brain, in our heart, it does, we can build more. And when that capacity widens, it's then we can become a bit curious of, how do I want to honour them? How do I want to remember them? And what I love with One Last Wave, Dan, is that you really just shook the table on what honouring and remembering loved ones looks like. I think that can be something where people, I think from my experience and speaking with people, really struggle with, because they may not necessarily relate with perhaps the status quo of how we should remember our loved ones. You know, perhaps whether that is like spiritually, like going to a church or having a bench, you know, the traditional ways we're told and how we should remember. And then that can feel quite limiting. Like if you don't fit in that box, you're like, well, I'm a bit at a loss of how I can honour and remember my person. So when someone like you comes in and goes, well, I'm remembering my dad by putting his name on a surfboard and going up for a wave, catching a wave, that box gets wider and you go, oh yeah, I can do anything I want to honour them. And I think that's what I just love so much, is when I love meeting someone who just completely disrupts the status quo of it and goes, no, I'm going to remember my person this way, and it brings me immense comfort, and I want to share that with the world, because it just limits that pigeonholing of how we should be grieving. And that's clearly why, Dan, after you put that original TikTok up and it just blew up, because people could see that, they just saw, oh, wow, and this is another way that I can grieve and connect with my person. I mean, I have no doubt that when you posted it, and it blew up, like, of course it would.
I mean, you never know with TikTok sometimes.
True, right? That's the thing.
But I think the authenticity of it and that connection that people found through it, I think there was something there. And, you know, when I think about ways that people did previously, you know, even, you know, you see it all the time. People go write the name of someone on the beach and it gets washed away, or they spread ashes somewhere or whatnot, or, you know, they do a memorial or something like that. And a lot of that is, I mean, again, I don't think there's a wrong way to do it. It's whatever feels right to you. But I think that there's certainly space to allow people to say it's honor people in a happy and energetic way. You know, like this is what it was. We continue to take the boards out all the time, because it isn't just, you know, something in the ground and that's what it is, or a sign or whatnot. This is an active memorial of doing something exciting, and it allows you to remember them. They don't know, you know, not everyone on the boards were surfers or even ever been to the ocean, but it is something that is active, engaged, keeping the memory alive. And that was what was really important to me, because that's who my dad was. And I think that piece of it resonated with individuals, just to know that, you know, my son or my daughter, you know, is out there on the board all the time, going out and seeing imagery of that that's so exciting to see, and putting sort of a positive memory in there at the end, because so much of, at least my father, and thinking about it, so many of those memories were, it was, you know, saddened by a lot of it, obviously, but it was also just the last moments with him weren't his you know, pinnacle of strength. Yeah. You know, it was seeing him deteriorate to that. And the same thing with my dog, honestly, like after Rudy died, I continued to take walks, the same walks that we took every single day. I was doing it with a leash, but no dog, and it probably looked really strange.
Oh, my heart.
I'd go to the park, the same park, and, you know, he'd always roll in a similar place, and his fur was still there, and I'd sit there sort of by the water of the park, and I'd just sit there cry with a leash in my hand. I'm sure some people could see it, but a lot of people probably thought this was a strange guy in, like, a dog park, just sitting there crying. But without sort of knowing that, I was doing the same things that we did, so that I could be close to him and feel that.
Yeah.
And that was the same thing with taking the board out, is doing something that was positive and active that reminded you of them. And that opens, as you said, I mean, opens a door to endless possibilities. It doesn't matter what the connection you had with your loved one was. you know, reading poetry, doing art, picking flowers, going on trips, whatever it may be, cooking, you can find ways to reconnect to those memories and feel close to them. And that's a big part of what it is and why it's so important, I think, for people to do that.
It's rituals, really, isn't it? I think rituals can be, again, it's all these kind of words and things that have been maybe previously connotated something else. So, like, I think probably before, and maybe a lot of people hear the words rituals and they think that is maybe potentially religious or spiritual specific, but actually, yeah, these rituals. So, like what you said there, Dan, about going out on that walk and taking your dog's leash, is that that was a ritual and that was part of your life, and you were still honoring that ritual. And realizing that we can create as many rituals in our life as we want, whether they are daily rituals, weekly, monthly, whatever it may be, that connects us to our people and to our grief. And that when all these things become ritualistic, and you realize, oh, when I have these in like my toolkit, it makes the days a bit easier. It makes the days go by. Like I was talking with someone earlier and they said kind of beautifully, how, you know, going out in nature for a walk every single day, she really feels her mum with her there. And I said, that's your ritual. And she was like, yeah, it is, isn't it? I was like, there you go. Like, it's sometimes we think these small things, we think, oh, they're not big enough to be the thing that's helping me with my grief, or, oh no, I wouldn't put that as like part of my grief toolkit. But if that is the moment where you feel perhaps most connected, most at peace with your grief or with your loved one, it sounds like a ritual.
It's the small acts of kindness to yourself, really. You know, finding ways to reconnect in even in the smallest of ways. I mean, I think that all the time. That there's a story I'll tell you about one of the boards when we get into it.
Yeah.
But it's those small little acts of kindness towards other people, but also towards ourselves. And initially, they aren't easy. Every one of those walks was hard to drag myself off the couch and go do that walk because I knew what was coming. I knew the emotions that were going to flood in the second I got to the same ways and remembered him and remembered what he did at certain places. They aren't easy moments, but once you can sort of overcome that, then they do become those positive rituals that we can insert into our daily lives to help us, you know, be able to cope with things and draw upon them whenever need be. But getting past that those initial few times is difficult for sure, but it's highly important, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I want to go, Dan, to talk about the first board. So you've had the first wave, you've had your first wave with your dad, and then from posting the TikTok to then going, okay, we're doing this. Can you talk us through what was the first journey? What were you thinking? What were you feeling all the way to the conception of, okay, we're going to take the first board out?
So initially I wrote his name on just a sticky note
and
put it on the board. And then when I had the first 100 names come in, I thought, okay, I'll just put sticky notes all over the board. And quickly realized that wasn't going to work in so many ways when it's water and floating around. So I said, I'm going to have to find a different way. And I said, I'll use the silver Sharpie that I have, because I had just had this old board and I had spray painted it black and made it really sort of an artistic piece, which interesting how all the boards became these works of art. The first one I wouldn't say is as much of a work of art, because I was the artist, and I don't really consider myself.
It's the origin board.
So I just started to write names with that silver Sharpie on it, and within, I think it was 5-6 days, within the first week for sure, it had filled up completely.
Wow.
And you know, all the way down. But I would keep taking it out all the time. So the first 50 names went on, and I would take it out into the ocean and surf and come back. Because I really didn't envision it getting to the point where I would fill up an entire board in a week, let alone all the boards that we had done. So I was just trying to honor each person as they came on the board. And I would create videos of each one that I was writing on and share that with the families and whatnot. And then it filled up within that first week. And then I started having to think, okay, well, now we got to make a website. We got to do all kinds of stuff, because this is becoming something real. I need to find a way to connect to these families and keep track of everything so that, you know, we can continue to honor them.
Yeah.
And so then everything came about, and then we moved on to the next board and had a wonderful shaped ad. And the boards got bigger and longer and more names and, just incredible to see how it evolved and putting them out all over the world now. It's just unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And I think the best stories and the most, you know, they all come from, you know, there's no plan. There's no plan at all. You just do something and you just go, yeah. Oh, and then it picks up a bit of interest. And, you know, so, you know, we don't go into these things of, I want to get to this point or to that point. You're just like, I just want to help people. I just want to help. I just want to, like we said earlier, I've discovered this new way of honouring my dad, like you say. And then you're just like, maybe someone else might benefit from this too. And then it just quickly snowballs, but it's like a snowball in the best kind of way. And you're like, oh my That's God. Right. And then it's really conflicting because you're dealing with people and you're dealing with grief. It is, it's really hard, isn't it? Kind of navigating, well, when a project can really take off and it be so emotionally invested for you. But I think that is our get up and goes, isn't it?
It is. And that was so many decisions sort of early on because it wasn't, you know, you submit a friend's name to win $500 type of thing. This was, you know, sharing very emotional stories about someone's life and about the person themselves, the family that was struggling with it. Mm. And so each email and connection to a family member, I felt had to be honored. And so I didn't want to automate things that would have made it far easier instead of having to go in and read and respond and, you know, copy each name, you know, put it into a sheet to be able to keep track of things. But it was part of that for me was making sure that I connected to it. Because when I'm out there on all the boards, I look down and I see names and I remember the stories and the families connected to them. That piece of it is really important for me. And the energy of the boards, like I have lots of surfboards and I had lots of surfboards before, but now I exclusively ride the One Last Wave boards because there's a different type of energy. Like it has transformed my surfing in general. It isn't so much about, you know, charging down the biggest wave now as it is sort of really connecting to the ocean. And that forced me to connect to nature in a more profound way than I had previously. Mm. And that was healing for me. And it, you know, it gives me energy and also helps to honor people. So a lot of that has evolved through there, but it was hard. Those early decisions about how do you grow this to reach more people and help more people, but at the same time, keeping it very personalized. Mm-hmm. You know, I respond to as best as I can, every single direct message, every email, every comment that comes on social media as well. And that's difficult sometimes, not just in terms of the time, but in terms of having to hear the stories. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to take on, but I think it was important to do. So I struggled with those early decisions about how to push the project forward. And it was really just, it doesn't matter how slow the progress is. You know, we don't need to advertise for this type of thing. It's more about word of mouth. If this was healing to me, maybe it'd be healing to you. If it was healing to you, maybe it'll be healing to the next family. And that's sort of the beauty of how it's gone about, is it's that pay it forward type of situation where the families who are on one board end up, you know, buying a t-shirt, something commemorative, and that helps to fund the board, the next board that goes on. And then you see people come back, you know, oh, my loved one was on board one, and they'll comment on board seven. About how beautiful it is to see that going out. And so it really is a community together. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not just there and then they leave because they've had their go. You know, someone of the community members stay together. And that's so meaningful to me because I'm still here. Everyone else is still here engaged in helping those who come on and sort of find their way through it as well. So I love that about it. Something that I'm most grateful for.
That's so beautiful. And I love that, people, they stay because it's almost, they want to, you know, open their arms to new families and people who are grieving and coming and share that experience with them. And I had goosebumps when you were talking about, you know, Dan, like, I so know what you mean when you know, with every name, every person that comes in, like, you just don't forget a story. Like, you just don't. And people say, how? Like, if someone genuinely ran through my books and picked out a random name, I would say, boom, boom, boom. I know. It is ingrained. And I think as much as, you know, you say it's difficult time-wise, emotional-wise, it feels necessary because, well, this is one of our projects. And just of this is real, it's real honourable. It's honourable that we are being able to, people are trusting us with these things. And so we take that honour very strongly. And it's, you know, we will reply to every email. We will reply because that is necessary and it is important. And people, you know, we can automate things or do whatever it may be, but it's like, people just don't get it. People who get it, yeah, and the people who don't. And it's like, yeah, I know I could probably automate that, but I'm not about to respond to someone who's just opened up their heart about their dying mother with an automated email, because I know if that was me, and I think that's the best way, isn't it, to always kind of bring yourself back off. Well, if this was me, and then we can go back, well, this was me. This was me. I don't have to imagine this was me once upon a time.
And still we get it.
We will always get it, no matter how much work we do. You know, we will still always we understand that. Yeah. And so, taking the first board out, was there an audience there that day? Was it just you that day?
It's just me.
Wow.
Yeah, I
emotional.
Yeah, it was. I wasn't expecting the emotions, and that's why. And I've connected to a few people who have done it since, and it's been really interesting to see how their experience kind of mirrored my own, taking one of the boards out with their loved one on it. And it brings me back to what happened when I first did that. And again, there was no expectation. I just took it out because I wanted to, but then really seeing him out there and feeling connected to him. Mm. I mean, surfing in general, there's such a, there's a feeling that you shut out the rest of the world and you're sort of singularly focused on the energy, the emotions, nature itself, the ebbs and flows of the water. You're looking at the waves, you're feeling the water, the temperature, the air. I mean, everything is all together, and you have to be sort of perfectly aligned to be able to catch that wave. And it was really only when I was standing up on the wave going that I was able to sort of look down and think, there he is.
Like,
he's there with me now. We did that together. And that's the moment that I look to and hope to share with more people. So when I hear about people who have taken some of the boards out, that they were also in that moment. It's just really unique, and it's a wonderful thing to be able to share, because not many people have had that opportunity.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I feel overcome with emotion there. I'm thinking, I mean, I can't surf for anything, but I'll gladly learn if I could take a board out one day.
Yeah. I mean, you can. There's one close by now.
I know. Let's talk about that. So yeah, obviously, Dan, so yes, you're in the US, and predominantly the boards were in the US, but obviously, you know, anyone can write in and have their loved one written onto the board. But recently you had one come over to the UK. Can you tell us about that?
So I think it was board four. I had the young guy Sam, who reached out and wanted to have one of his best friends put on the board, and I did, and we had sort of been in touch a little bit after that, and taking that board out was, you know, unique for him as an experience to heal. And he reached out to me after we had put out, I mean, kind of around the same time we were putting out the sixth board, he'd reached out to me and said, would I ever be interested in bringing a board to the UK? And I said, sure. Like, I want to, you know, share this project around the world. But we had put one out in South Africa, and that worked out well because the Finn designer, JB Finn Design, had sort of volunteered in a way to sort of take on that role of,
okay,
as a guardian almost of the board, which is what I need, is someone who understands the sensitivity of the project to be able to have the board, because you're going to be sharing it with other families who come to visit and whatnot. And so they did a great job and continue to do that and take the board out, and it's wonderful. And I was thinking about, where can we go? What can we do next? And then Sam wrote in and said that he wanted to take that on. And knowing that he already had a connection to the project, having lost Will, was his friend, And I thought it'd be great to be able to have Will on this board for him, that he could take him out in his own backyard, you know, by the waves there in Nuki. And then as we were discussing it and started to develop that board, Sam lost his father. So it was like another whole level of it. And I wasn't sure whether that would be sort of too much to take on at that time. But as we've found, being involved in it, being able to help others, being able to talk about it, being able to share more, talk about your dad, talk about your friends, it was really helpful to Sam. And I mean, he's just an absolutely wonderful human being. He's a teacher, a great surfer, but just such a kind-hearted soul. And I'm so happy that he took that on. So we had Ben Skinner, who's sort of he's a European champion, sort of a world-renowned longboarder, shape the board. beautiful. It was like a 9.92 board, nine-foot board. We had over 800 names on it, and it was the release was one of the first that was truly attended by so many families locally, but also internationally, people that came to see the board. And I got, you know, sort of the live stream of it as Sam was taking it out. But the whole process going through it with him brought me back to what I had gone through, you know, writing the names. And I tried to express to Sam, I said, you know, this is going to be a very emotional thing ahead of time. You know, it's not just writing names on a board. You're hearing all these stories.
Yeah.
You're internalizing a lot of it. It's also your loved ones on there. Mm. You need to have your space to be able to do that, to sort of protect your own peace. And so like he'd write to me and say, I didn't imagine it to be so emotional. And so we'd have to take breaks and have conversations and go through it. Yeah. And it was the first time that I was really able to connect with someone in that way who was doing the same thing that I could relate to, that we could share, like sharing what I went through, what to be prepared for. And he went through it as well. I mean, so much of the process the whole way, even taking it out. And he FaceTimed me after he took the board out, just sitting there on the beach. You know, we both had a nice cry. And it was just, it was so helpful to me that someone was willing to do that.
Yeah.
Because I was finally able to share what I go through on a daily basis with the project. And also beautiful to see how it was so helpful to him and all the other families there. So, I mean, it's, again, another beautiful work of art. And released in such an exquisite place. I mean, that is such a beautiful, peaceful place to be.
Beautiful.
And I've had some really incredible stories related to it about people who sort of traveled around the world to come see the board.
It's incredible.
And it's a reminder of how powerful such a simple act can be. Mm-hmm. Truly.
Oh, it's so true. I think I speak about this kind of a fair bit of, you know, people may ask me, like, with the line of work that I do or others, and they're like, what's the secret? And I'm like, it's so simple. People just want connection. We want to be part of something. And, you know, it's not that we're, you know, dependent, but it's just we want to feel part of something bigger and that we're not alone. So even, you know, you sharing, Dan, about with Sam, of kind of, you know, starting out the project and it all being you and, you know, small amount of your team, but then also kind of passing the baton on to someone else and them truly experiencing the full experience, almost looking and being like, you get it now, don't you? You get it now, why? Like, it is a ritual of doing this, the ritual of writing the names. It's not just the ritual of riding the board and getting out there. Like, I can just imagine, you know, why it was really important to have breaks through writing the name. Because as you say, you know, you're not just writing John Doe, you're writing John Doe who you've heard about through his wife, what he was like as a husband, what he was like as a father, you know, with 100 plus names, that's a lot to go through.
It is. And it's, We talked recently as well, because, you know, then the board is released a few times. We release it a few times and it continues to be surfed and he continues to show it to families. But, and I kind of knew that this would happen, but you can't just disassociate from that once it's happened.
Yeah.
And we're going to have another conversation, but him and I need to keep reconnecting over this. Mm. And continue to have the conversations about the emotions that we're feeling through this all, because it isn't something that you could just do and then leave.
Yeah.
It stays with you in so many ways. And I'm grateful that we have that we made that connection and that we're able to help each other in that way. I mean, I can't say enough of it. He's just a beautiful human being. And I'm so happy that I can imagine someone else taking that on in the way that he did. It's just extremely grateful for him.
Amazing. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to hopefully some future UK boards coming. I'm definitely gonna be finding my way down there, because
one that you can go surf right now.
Yeah, I think so. I think I'll have to get the details for Sam after this. I actually am going down to Devon soon, actually, so I'm not too far. I'll see what I can do.
Just to see it, you know, just to see the board. It is.
Yeah, I'd love to just feel it and just to feel it and just to be quite actually in its presence. Like, I almost feel this quite powerful, even just thinking about the board. Like, being in its presence alone must just feel like, whoa. Just like you said, you know, feeling the energy of all those names.
There's definitely an energy. There's a draw to them that I feel, but again, not something that I imagined other people feeling.
Mm.
So there's been many, many stories, and two recently, one of a lady who traveled to South Africa to see the board, and we were talking, she wanted to get her shirt, or you know, one last wave shirt before she went, and she was able to get it in time. And then, you know, she traveled over there and met with the shaper in Cape Town and was able to paddle out with the board.
Wow.
And, you know, took her dad out into the ocean and just, you know, and I wrote to her and I said, I want to know how that felt for you. I want to understand what that meant, because that's a huge journey, you know, to go on, to be able to do that. Mm. And like, why for just a name?
Mm.
Why is that? What I know why, but I want to hear from them what that meant. And then there's another lady, and this is for the seventh board. She was in Boston, not that far, but an hour or so from me. And I only heard from this after from Sam, but the board was released on a Saturday. She apparently flew from Boston to London on Friday, like Friday night or something, and then got there in the morning and got in a car, drove all the way to Newquay, and was writing to Sam to say, you know, can you hang around for an extra 10 minutes? Because I'm just arriving. He didn't know where she was coming from, but just knew that she was coming. So he stayed around. She arrived in her one last wave shirt and took some pictures with the board, took off her shoes, walked into the ocean for 5 minutes, stood there, walked out, got back into her car, and flew back to Boston that same day. And like when I heard that story, I just really at a loss for words. Why would someone feel so compelled to do that? Mm. I mean, I understand why, but why did you feel so compelled to do that, to take on such a journey for 5 minutes with a surfboard?
Mm.
You know, like if you didn't understand the project and the significance of it all, someone flying around the world just to see a surfboard doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But there is something truly healing about the ocean, the place, the release of your loved one into such a beautiful place, and just to see their name on there. It actually just felt so compelled to make that journey and do that. And I was just so inspired to know that someone going through such profound grief is able to take that on. That's not me walking around the corner, you know, to go on a walk with my dog. That is a huge journey to undertake. You know, and I can't imagine all the emotions the whole way through, sitting on the plane, the anticipation getting there, all of that. You know, it's just
a lot of time, just remarkable.
And that's really okay. This project is resonating, and there's a reason for it, and we need to continue.
Yeah, it's got that magnetic energy, and I think it will continue forever. I just think it's so beautiful, Dan, and like I said in the beginning, I am just rallying for you and everything you're doing with One Last Wave. I think it's, you know, I think when I saw it, I thought, oh, will I put my loved one's name on? And I think I will, you know, I think I will on the next board. I think it'll be very emotional, because I too feel quite an affinity with the ocean, particularly with my mum. She was born and raised by the seaside, so the seaside is very important to us. And kind of my friend Poppy, she moved down to the seaside as well. So open bodies of water very much are, you know, it's so beautiful, and but then also all encompassing. And it almost feels like very just synonymous with grief, that you can look out at the ocean, at the sea, and think like, wow, it's beautiful. And know that if you were plonked right in the middle of it, my God, you'd be fighting for your life, whatever it may be. And it kind of feels just so synonymous with grief.
I think regardless of where the boards go out, people can find connection to it, because it is the ocean, because it connects us all around the world. So it doesn't really matter. It's not like a city that it's going into. It's going out into the water, which, you know, through the fluidity of it all, it's going to connect us to it. And I think that's helpful. So we'll have to find some place that really gets you to travel a long distance.
Oh, you know, I will. I'm wondering, you know, I can imagine for many people, you know, around the world, knowing that their loved one's name is on a board, like, I can imagine even if I was to put my loved ones on a board and if I couldn't get there, like even just going down to a body of water and knowing like maybe at the exact same time you're going out, whoever's going out, just being like that connection across oceans. Wow. Yeah. Like I get goosebumps thinking about it. That's just it incredible. Is.
I was thinking about it the other day too, that, you know, when we're grieving and we feel sort of stuck in that grief, we tend not to want to leave our homes or leave the comfort of what feels safe.
Yeah.
And I think another piece of the project is that the fact that these boards are going out all over the world and there's a pull, as I described with those stories, of people wanting to go visit them, part of it gives them a reason to get outside of that comfort and to actually travel around the world. And that part of it is also very healing, to know that you can continue to live your life and do things, even if it's driven by getting to the place that helps you honor your loved one. If that is a journey for yourself, that helps you to heal because you're no longer stuck in that same place of comfort. You're getting outside of that box and finding a way to see the world again, to live again, because so much of what we experience when we lose and we're grieving is that we feel like, oh, I might never feel that life again. And so I've noticed that in more and more stories that are shared is that people are using it as a way to feel alive again, not just to honor them. So it's beautiful to see that happen.
Another beautiful side to it as well of kind of, the opportunity that the boards offer for people is to opt back into life. Sometimes it might be, you know, we can look and we think, oh, I should start living again. Or, what does living again even look like? You know, we can feel that pull of, I know there is more to life than this and I can get more to life from this, but what is it and how do I get it? So having something like traveling across the world, across the nation, wherever it is, to go and see that board, I think that's a pretty good challenge to get you up and going.
I love to see that because I think sometimes people are a little hesitant. They're thinking, oh, well, it's not in, you know, my local beach, you know, I want to have a board released here. And I share that there is something really healing about, you know, by all means, honor them however you want to and wherever you want to. But there is a piece of getting back out into the world and living by doing that. It gives you a reason to get out and travel, you know, and see the world again, which is what our loved ones would want anyways.
Yeah, see that world. Amazing, Dan. Well, before we go, can you tell the listeners where they can find you and any other or more exciting boards that are upcoming that people can get involved in?
Yeah, so onelastwaveproject.com is sort of the best place that has all of our socials. You can look at One Last Wave Project across social media, and we are there. But I sort of direct people to the website. You can submit the name of a loved one. You can see previous boards. You can read the story about the project and find all our socials that way. And you can send an email and I'll be responding. We have our next boards being released in Florida. It's going to be our first female shaper, which is really exciting. Catherine Girard, and she's down in West Palm Beach. So that'll be going out somewhere along, I think, the West Coast in Florida. And then we have another one upcoming probably in the fall, I think, is going to be in Norway, which is going to be the northernmost surf shop in the world. So that could be an opportunity for you to travel.
That could be. I could get to Norway. Yeah.
I think that one's going to be sort of under the northern lights, we're hoping.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, Dan, you've definitely put that into my brain now. I could definitely be there for that one.
Those are the next two exciting ones.
Yeah. Dan, it's been an absolute delight to talk with you. I hope for anyone listening that you either feel, you know, not only compelled to maybe put your loved one's name onto one of the beautiful One Last Wave Projects boards, or more so that you just feel inspired to, you know, go against the grain of what you want to do to honor your person. And just hopefully this has opened up your mind a bit of that there are various different ways to honoring your loved ones, like putting them on a sticky note on a board and going out and having one last wave. Dan, it's been a total delight. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. I appreciate more than you'll ever know your support of the show, and I hope this episode has supported you in one way or another. Spread the good word about the Grief Gang podcast. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Subscribe to the show on your chosen listening platform so you're first to know when a new episode drops. Visit the show notes below to follow the Grief Gang on all social platforms and pay our website a visit to find further resources and ways to get in contact and work with me. Look after yourself and know that you are never alone. I'll see you soon.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.